implementation and conservation, and to propose a revised framework for language documentation which acknowledges that language documentation bears a commitment to the maintenance of linguistic diversity. What we're doing is putting a spin on language activism that we hope to share with you today and to get your feedback on. Margaret?
So both of us were doing some wild scribbling during Nicholas's plenary. Thank you for the lead-in. So I want to introduce the context in which we've been developing this framework for language activism. For us, it starts with what I've been calling the new linguistics, which I've been defining as a more participatory and politicised linguistics characterised by profound changes to ethics, methods and practice in the field. And these are changes that have been taking place at least over the last 10 years. So these changes have been occurring alongside of the development of language documentation as a field of linguistics. What we suggest is that language activism is at the centre of the new linguistics, and that we're all part of the new linguistics. We're going to start, before we move on to how we see these terms being used and how activism sits in the field of linguistics, we want to look at how we've been using the terms language activist and linguist in the literature at the moment. So I've got about four or five quotes that I want us to just quickly look at. And the beginning point here is that language activist is most commonly used in the literature to contrast with linguist. So to take some of the sting out of this, I'm going to start with a quote from a paper that that Nicholas Himmelman and I have in press at the moment. And we say, however, the scope of the problem requires larger scale action, and this persuaded Himmelman et al. To seek funding from the Volkswagen Endangered Languages Program to train a new generation of Indonesian linguists and language activists. And then to look at how a few other people are using the term, beginning with Tony Woodbury in his 2003 paper, who argues that community language activists have had a profound effect on the new documentary linguistics, and it's becoming less and less viable for linguists to think of stakeholders in language documentation to be constituted only of a vaguely conceived scientific posterity. And then we asked a number of our fellow presenters here at the conference whether we could quote from their abstracts. And I understand that that Carol and Rebecca have already changed their terminology a little, knowing that this was on the way. Nevertheless, the first quote is from the paper which they gave this morning, which I wasn't able to attend. So Infield was the first time that workshops were combined with field training, that linguists and language activists were brought together for shared training. Jeannie Bell, who presented in this room this morning, Jeannie's use of the terms probably comes closest, I think, to the ways that we're trying to see the terms used. So Jeannie talking about Aboriginal women contrasts trained linguists, language workers, community researchers, language activists, and non-Indigenous linguists. And then Victoria Rao and colleagues talk about the collaboration between the linguist and the community language activist over a decade that's produced a traditional dictionary. So several examples of current usage. And we argue that the way that the terms have been used in the literature are useful in these following ways, that they call attention to the involvement of Indigenous peoples in the conservation of their own endangered languages, the documentation of their own endangered languages, not always endangered. That the use of the contrast here can also demonstrate that the work with endangered languages or with minority languages that's taking place isn't restricted to the work of trained linguists who are external to the community, have no heritage link to the language. And that contrast can highlight partnerships and collaborations. Moving from that, we suggest that the way the terms are being used draws a contrast in relation to three features. activities, indigeneity, and training. So coming back to activities, most often the work that's associated with the term language activist in the literature is advocacy, revitalisation, and maintenance. The work that's associated with the term linguist is documentation and description. Language activist in the literature is most often modified by Indigenous, local, community, or some variant. Linguist is most often not modified and refers to somebody who is external to the language community. And in terms of training, linguist most often is seen as somebody with formal linguistic training in a university setting, often at a higher level. And language activist is often portrayed as somebody who has no linguistic training or training at a lower level, a certificate level, or training in an allied discipline, for example. So what we suggest is that there are dangers in the ways the terms are being used at the moment. And those for us are that there are some assumptions that come out of the way the terms are being used in the literature, including the way that I've used the terms in the literature. So the core activities of documentation and description, given this contrast, are typically undertaken by a linguist who is non-Indigenous, external to the community, and formally trained in linguistics. While the core activities of revitalisation and maintenance are undertaken by a language activist, someone typically who's Indigenous, internal to the community, and who lacks higher level training. And the impact of this usage for us, moving towards developing a framework and seeing how language activism fits in the field of language documentation, is that advocacy, revitalisation, and maintenance aren't seen as core activities of linguists. And this places a more onerous responsibility for language conservation efforts on people who are internal to the community. The way that we're using these terms at the moment seems to continue what we're suggesting is an outdated assumption that members of language communities aren't involved in language documentation. They don't aspire to be involved in language documentation, and they aren't involved in language documentation. We know this isn't our intent, speaking as a linguist. We have a lot of good examples that demonstrate that this isn't our intent. There are a lot of fantastic training programs like, you know, ALDI and SILDI and Infield and so forth that demonstrate that this isn't the case. But we think that the terms continue to put these assumptions out there into the world. And so, to the framework.
Okay, towards a framework. We propose a framework for language activism which draws and takes this issue of a hard line, which is being drawn, in our opinion, right now, between language activists and linguists, and between documentation and revitalization and conservation. And we want to suggest that using these terms in that way is reinforcing this divide in the field rather than pulling things together. Instead, we'd like to argue that they are part of a continuum of activities leading to the conservation of a specific language and the sustaining of linguistic diversity in general. The responsibility to confront language endangerment crisis actively, we get that word in there wherever we can, is shared across disciplines of linguistics and between the stakeholders of all partners. Our framework consists of the following statements. Language documentation and conservation bear a commitment to the maintenance of linguistic diversity. Language activism is a necessary and intrinsic component of language documentation and conservation. And finally, activism is the first step in building efforts towards documentation and conservation. The context for this is really important to understand because we aren't coming at this just, you know, out of nowhere or even at just looking at the usage of these terms. There has been a developing context for wanting to look at activism in a different way. It's based really on the following, that there's the knowledge that both linguistic and biological diversity are converging, that language rights excuse me, the language rights movement and dialogue on ethics, which is going on worldwide right now, I think, in a way that we haven't seen in quite a while, and the responsibilities of linguistic research. The place of language rights within the wider indigenous rights movement, it causes us to want to look at these terms in more specific ways. And finally, and I think very importantly, the evidence is that every successful language program that we know of, that where languages have been revitalized or are on the way to being revitalized, were developed by a small core of people who took action and stayed the course. And again, we'd like to pull that notion together so that we're not consistently separating this into linguists versus activists. And so we've been working towards a definition and a model for this. And our first definition was the following. And Margaret and I were at Infield. We were sort of presenting this and getting some feedback. So it keeps getting revised a little bit. But this is where we started. That a language activist is a person who focuses energetic action towards language. And then, did I miss a slide there? Mapping activism and relationships to communities is something we decided to do. Because there's, based on the first definition, Margaret later in a later paper added the distinctions between in-country and out-of-country activists. So we sort of centered when we started our course at Infield on the notion of focusing this energetic action, but that there were these other dynamics going on that we had to address. So we ended up with this sort of preliminary slide.
Switching.
Okay.
And then we set about revising the definition. And so one of the points that I want to make right now is that we really see this as being a conversation. We haven't reached an endpoint in the way that we're thinking about activism, in the way we're trying to frame it, or in the way that we're trying to model it. So we're taking all the input that we can on this. At Infield, which I'm assuming or hoping that most of you know about, a workshop that Carol Gennetti created that ran at UC Santa Barbara last summer, Susan and I taught a workshop on language activism. And we had about 25 people in that workshop coming from many different kinds of communities and backgrounds, different training and so forth. And so we've been feeding input from that workshop into the way that we think about language activism now. One of the first big discussions at Infield was, where do we place things like the English only conversation? Is somebody who really works hard for English only a language activist, which the first definition would allow? And we've had a lot of people coming out very strongly on both sides of this, and some people saying, you should allow in the English-only people into the way that you perceive language activism. And, of course, this is not why we taught at a workshop at Infield. And we were kind of horrified and wondering how we get at this. And it was the, big discussion on the first day in the workshop. And that first day moved towards this redefinition A, which was trying to exclude English only. So a person who focuses energetic action towards the language rights of, and then trying to sort of narrow it down in some way that was still feeling a bit clumsy. And then we moved it sort of more away from peoples towards languages and linguistic diversity, and moved more towards B. A language activist is a person who focuses energetic action towards preserving and promoting linguistic diversity, or towards supporting language rights, or possibly some reformulation which tries to bring all of these things in together. At the moment, for us, the highlighted definition is the one that seems to most clearly focus on both documentation and conservation efforts. And we then also at the Infield workshop, in collaboration with all of the participants, tried to redraft the model. And we decided that earlier formulation that we had, which was about whether people are internal or external to the community, wasn't really getting at what we felt was important in terms of roles and the way that we relate with two communities, languages, the kinds of work that we do and so forth. And so this was one of the models that we that was drafted at Infield. Whether you have a particular connection to a specific language community, and then we separated out in that conversation life affiliations from built affiliations, from external affiliations, recognizing here that any one of us might have more than one kind of affiliation. So a person may have a life affiliation through being an Indigenous member of a community, and also have a built affiliation with another community in which they've chosen to base their linguistic research, and then possibly step out of that and play an external role as a university lecturer or a documentary filmmaker and so forth. So we're not suggesting these are mutually exclusive, but that this is a way of framing what kind of activism you can be doing at any one time, depending on the role that you're playing at that particular time. Back to you.
Yep. Okay, so what we're trying to say here is that, you know, activism cuts across a lot of lines. It doesn't have to be limited to the way we've been seeing it used in the literature. And we see it as a way of binding documentation and conservation, revitalization, all of the things that we're all sort of engaged in one way or another together. When activism is recognized in this way, documentary projects change shape. And I really want to underscore this. This is what we're seeing, or what we believe, I think. And that is the hardness of the lines that separate and commonly draw linguistic researchers and community members, sometimes apart, tend to soften when you see all parties involved as more in playing an activist role. The notion that researcher is in the power position begins to fade as well. You can become to a shared goal so that you aren't operating off separate goals, and I think that's an important idea. Projects become clear team efforts. We heard a lot of that this morning, I think, in some of the discussions that, you know, someone brought up early on a question about, do you have to be more than just a linguist? And, you know, I think we have to build teams. That's the short answer. Our approach to ethics, methods, and practice in the field changes as well.
Okay, yeah, I just want to talk to that for a second.
All right.
And because we're not going to have time, we have sections in the paper which talk about how people with those different affiliations might act in response to ethics, methods, and practice in the field. I was so proud of my reverse R in the Activists Are Us, and it's just decided to disappear.
She spent her lunch hour bragging about it.
It's so true. It says a lot about my skills, doesn't it? So, Activists Are Us, whether you can see that there or not. We wanted to include this slide because we argue at length in the paper that, you know, we understand that people, especially people external to a language community, you know, take a deep breath and get really fearful and think, I'm being asked to do something that I don't have time for, I don't know how to do, don't give me another responsibility. And so we go to some length to say that, you know, you're an activist already. You know, if you're doing documentary linguistics, you're an activist already. We want people to rethink where their activism sits at the moment, given what it is that they're doing, and to give that some prominence when we're talking about our work and thinking about our work and applying for grants and so forth. So all of you are up here, I hope, in some place or another. We were thinking of different individuals as we were going down here, about people who've created blogs and people who moderate the linguist list and people who sit on grant bodies, for example, and people who use their language skills to support a land rights case and all of these kinds of things. If you contribute an email to the Resource Network for Linguistic Diversity, for example, you're using your language activism. So we just want you to think about where your activism is. Ben Tucker, who isn't here with us at the moment, argues that if you're teaching first-year undergraduate linguistics, you're teaching language activism potentially. And so we also have a section about putting our activism more openly and more clearly into all of our teaching.
Okay, so final thoughts. Becoming an activist in addition to being a linguist or a member of a speaking community is a process of looking out and around, a process of engaging others in advocacy for the language. And finally, the best chance to preserve linguistic diversity for each of us is to increase the level of activism within our own spheres of influence. And it's easy to dismiss this as sort of a topic that, oh yeah, okay, that's great. The bottom line is you don't make changes in our field or any others without people sort of stepping up to the plate and saying, okay, I'm going to do my part to be an activist. And that doesn't mean being, as we had some experiences, we're not saying be zealots and go out and do this sort of thing. We're saying do what you can from where you are to raise awareness for the language and the language situation in the world. And I think we all need to do that. So we believe that requires a rethinking of our roles, and that's what we're trying to convey today.
Okay. Okay, you'll take more.
The slot. Oh, there we are.
Yeah. So there's still time for questions.
Ah, lights.
Hi.
Go be loud.
I've got two responses to what you said, and they're not terribly well formed, and hopefully they'll come without judgment. So one thing that I was thinking about when you're talking about stepping up to the fact that we're activists, and that ideally that means that we're working towards a shared goal, that we're, rather than linguist community, that we're all in together. Activists disagree, often quite violently.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that that could have some consequences for the nature of the relationship internally, in terms of methodologies, goals, lobbying activities, etc. So that's just one point I would make. And the other is, I think that it also empowers linguists not just to start doing work outside on a negotiated path of the communities they're working with. Myself. I'm Sarah Cutfield from the Australian Institute of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies. But if we're now all in it together, or acknowledging that we're all in it together, then I think that also means that linguists perhaps have sometimes more power to speak their own minds about the way activism can work. So that's just one thing.
Margaret has something to say, and so do I. I think, first of all, it's a work, we're in progress of rethinking of this. So, and I don't disagree with you on either of those points. I think they're worth really considering. Margaret will have something to say to that, right? Didn't you say you wanted
A quick one is to say that we're not suggesting that activists will all agree with each other.
No.
We're suggesting we all identify as activists and look at how our activism is shaped. And within any project, that might mean then that we've got 10 team members who are identifying different kinds of activism that they're doing, and they might disagree about what kind of activism needs to take place for a particular project. Fantastic. I think if people are sitting around having an active discussion about their activism, then we're already part of the way there.
Yeah, and just further, real quickly, the thing that I think has been concerning me for a while is when you draw the notion that the linguists are the documenters and somebody else is the activist, it absolves linguists of a lot of responsibility too, and I think that's what I'm really hoping to move away from, not so much that it empowers them somehow more, right? So I think it's there's tensions in all those issues, but so thank you for that.
Need to turn to this.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry for jumping in line. So I'm Love Michael. I'm from the University of California, Berkeley.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like sort of the overall point of your talk, and I definitely see the value in trying to get rid of that sharp distinction between activists and linguists and to reframe the entire issue. One thing that, this is a question I have about sort of the overall framework you have, is where sort of the political economy of linguistics and local communities fits into all of this. Lurking behind all of this, of course, is the fact that there are different kinds of products that can be produced in the context of activism and documentation broadly construed, but they have very different values in the communities in which they circulate. So, talking in very blunt terms, right, linguists need to produce publications in certain kinds of venues to garner prestige and so on and so forth. What were formerly called community activists have other needs.
Right.
And that aspect that sort of seems to be erased in your model. And so I'm wondering what you have to say about that.
Go, Mark.
Thanks, Liv. I think, you know, there's a lot of really interesting, useful points that are made there. I want to start by saying linguists don't all have to produce publications. Linguists can be internal to the community and working on documenting their own language or working through some different kind of agency. And so, you know, again, we keep using this word as though linguists are all academic-based external linguists. So it's a reality that all of the different kinds of language activists, whether they're external or internal, Indigenous or non-Indigenous, within the academy or external to the academy, have different needs, interests, and possibly institutional requirements. And that's part of what needs to be mediated and negotiated, and the part that we unfortunately don't have time to talk about the way that changes what we do in relation to ethics and methods and practice. That needs then to be part of talking about the protocols when a project is first created amongst whoever the members of that project team are. Everyone's going to have to sit around the table and think about how their respective employment needs and community needs and so forth can be negotiated. I've talked myself away from remembering what the second part of your...
So basically, you've basically sort of summarized my point better than I could. Namely, when you're sort of grouping everyone together as language activists, what happens to sort of the political economy?
And I think that the political economy kind of gets thrown up in the air and in a sense comes back to what Nicolas talked about as being the pragmatic response, which I really liked and wanted to see sort of more centrally in the way that we think about language documentation, that we're weighing everybody's needs and requirements. And so part of that will be academic publications and part of that will be products in the community. And in a sense, what we're saying is, I think, it's almost centrally, you don't need necessarily to be adding to anybody's workload. You need to be looking at how you're thinking about the workload and what kind of activism your workload is.
Okay, I'm sure the audience the participants in this room may have still many questions to ask the speakers, but we have to move on to different other sessions, so we have to stop the session here. And I would like to thank you, all of you, and the speakers for such a wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
I'm sorry we had to shorten.
No.
How does it work again?
I think you press the red button again.